Coach Your Brains Out is brought to you by our wonderful patrons. New patrons include Richard Gary and Brent Diltz. If you enjoy the show and would like to contribute, you can head over to patreon.com/coachyourbrainsout and become a Coach Your Brains Out regular giver. Big thanks to everyone for supporting the show. Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen. Patty Dodd is the director of MB Sand and Dodd Volleyball School. She has coached at the collegiate level, high performance, and is currently working with both the men's and women's national beach teams. Patty, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Billy and John and Andrew.
So, Patty, you guys, MB Sand won the BVCA. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Can you tell our listeners what that is and I guess how you did it?
Well, the BVCA is considered the biggest beach volleyball club tournament in the country. It happens in Hermosa. I believe this is its sixth year. It just happened about a month ago. And there were 80 clubs from all over the country, and then you compete in it as a club. For every good finish that you get, first through fifth, you get awarded points, and they do it in the 12s, 14s, 16s, and 18s divisions. And we just had a really good showing. We didn't have any teams in the 18s. MB Sand is rather a young club. We're not quite 3 years old yet. So we took a ninth in the 16s. We took a bronze in the 14s and the fifth place. And then we took all three medals in the 12s. So that gave us enough points to, be considered the best club. So pretty special accomplishment for us.
Yeah, that's awesome. And those girls are going to be growing. So eventually you'll have some 18s that are hopefully mm-hmm. dominating too. I guess just to start talking about that the lower age level, what are some differences that you found between coaching a 12s team or even a 10s team versus maybe some older girls?
I had, you mentioned Dodd Volleyball School, and I had had the fortune of coaching these kids for a long time, and I think it makes a big difference to be fundamentally sound. And the game just takes care of itself. And, the girls, definitely they're really, really good athletes, but also they do just about every facet of the game well. They also know how to play with the wind. And I think those factors just gave us an advantage to be able to do so well at the 12s.
So at the 12s level, do you teach defense without a block or do you have them start at the net?
We start about 6-7 feet away from the net. So we do teach block-based defense, but it's a modified version of it. Basically, we start there. We slide in front of the passer. And basically, we are about 7-6 feet away from the net more than anything to pick up the oversets. And if the other side doesn't overset, then, we do our little drop footwork because they're littler, since they're already 6-7 feet away from the net and they can't take big strides like an older player, then it puts them at a pretty good spot to play defense once they drop.
Addy, I've seen you working on that with your younger players, and it's such a great middle ground between the adult game and professional game and how you have success at the 10, 12, 14 year old age. Are there any other things in what you teach that you feel like are kind of a middle ground between that very younger group and how they aspire to play?
Well, I think, when I see a 10, 12 year olds play volleyball, they tend to play really wide. And they tend to play far away from the net, really safe, they pretty much pass and they watch their pass. They don't really move anywhere,
right.
And they pass to each other, and then they sit each other, you know, 12, 14 feet away from the net. And we try and push our kids to pass and get to what we call the POP, point of preparation to hit, which is about 12, 13 feet away from the net. And then, you know, take chances of pushing that set pretty close to the net so that they can have a little more offense. And
that's,
I think,
cool.
that makes a really, really big difference for, you know, like an advanced 12 and a beginner 12.
Yeah. And Billy and John are working on that too. So that's cool.
Yeah. And Patty, one thing that I've noticed that you do at your club is you have your passing target pretty straight in front of the passer or on their half. Can you explain why you do that?
Yeah, so we speak a lot at the club about passing on our half, not on our partner's half. So we always dissect. We're constantly drawing a line down the middle, lengthwise. And we do so because it's a lot easier for the setter to move forward and pass. If I'm the passer, for the setter to make that move forward and set in front of me, than for that setter to maybe have to, you know, go far away from me and then have that, now that set travel 20, 30 feet. So, you know, we talk to the kids a lot about playing vertical and playing narrow and keeping that relationship of the passer to the setter, you know, pretty close to each other. And by the way, I need to stop here because Billy is one of the coaches at MBCN, and I feel so blessed to have him working with us. So a lot of this terminology, some of it might be mine, but I'm certainly always trying to reach into Billy's brain to pull stuff out of him. So thank you, Billy. You're part of the success with the BBCA.
Thanks. Yeah, I just kind of joined so I could research for this podcast, actually. So it's just been a couple months of learning.
Spy.
But yeah,
he's quitting tomorrow, Patty.
Yeah.
But as far as the passing on your half, I feel like I've always taught like just kind of pass in the middle. But I feel like with younger kids especially, a big problem is they end up passing to their partner, like way on their side. And I think just having that strict line down the middle of the court and passing like more in front of them is really kind of, I don't know, maybe a little bit more of a specific visual to get them passing forward rather than, you know, backwards towards their partner.
Yeah. So I think that visual of passing on your half really helps. I mean, it was really literally by trial and error because – you just get tired of saying pass forward.
Yeah.
So the visual helps.
That's cool. And I've seen how much you draw lines in the sand, and we're so lucky in beach volleyball to just be working on a canvas where we can draw whatever we want.
Yeah.
Patty, what do you see that separates the top teams at the younger levels? Is it a certain skill? Is it a strategy? Is it wind knowledge? Like, what do you see kind of separating the top teams at the 10s, 12s, 14s?
A couple of things. Certainly, ball control. Really, really important. I think the 12s, you know, that the serve is such a big factor. Sometimes a game can get taken over by a really, really good server. So if your 12s can pass and be ready for any type of serve, then they're going to have success. Controlling your emotions is an important factor. Knowing when to call a timeout, very important. The kids would just let the points roll over and run over them. And they don't call a timeout, or they call the timeout at the wrong time. So those are things that we actually discuss in practice. We talk about tournament tips, TT, and discuss those things. Playing with the wind and knowing how the wind can affect the game, I think is fundamental. I think it's as fundamental as pass, set, hit. I think knowing the wind is that important.
And Patty, you mentioned the right and wrong time to call timeout. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Okay, so for example, let's say that the score is 7-6 and, you know, we're down and, you know, we gave a few points in a row and one more serve and then we're going to switch sides. So I always tell the kids, if you're 1 point away from doing your side switch, don't call a timeout yet, because that little trip that you do underneath the net or around the pole is a really important time to converse about and analyze what are some of the things that we can do better as a team to get out of the side out rut or whatever problem that the team is having at that time. And it's certainly not a time to converse about, are we going for ice cream or are we going to go for a dip in the water after the game? Because it happens in a lot with the younger teams, believe it or not.
That's cool. Patty, I feel like you use such wonderful language that's simple to understand. And I'm wondering what are kind of the top three things that you discuss when teaching young players about wind?
First of all, we need to know which way is blowing, so the kids know how to test that. And in the South Bay, where we train in Manhattan Beach, the wind is typically offshore, so it's going west to east, which makes it pretty predictable for us to be practicing in those conditions often. And we speak about if we're setting towards the strand, we lift, because that's facing east. If we're setting towards the water, facing west, we push. So, you know, there's just little things like that we're constantly reminding the kids about.
Nice. Patty, digging into your background a little bit, you taught Spanish at American Martyrs School in Manhattan Beach for 12 years. And can you tell me a little bit about how you apply your classroom knowledge of education and teaching into sport? Because I don't think that most coaches are as well-versed in education as you are.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, John Gooden has this quote, and I wish I could remember it word by word, but basically it goes something like, you know, just teachers have an advantage when they become coaches, because they have had an opportunity to manage, whether it's children or, you know, grown-ups. And I feel that, and it wasn't just 12 years at Martyrs. I also taught a couple years at other schools. So, you know, 19 years total. I really feel that that was a gift to my coaching, because especially with the younger ones, you have to be able to manage them in order to teach them, then to coach. Because if the kids are unruly, then it's really, really difficult to teach. And if they're not learning fundamentals, then the game is just not going to happen as easily otherwise.
And you mentioned unruly kids. I guess, what do you do if you have some of those kids that are getting a little wild at practice? Do you make them run and swim around the pier?
Oh, my gosh, Billy, you've been at practice. No, that's definitely one of my pet peeves as a coach, I think, because when I played, I ran plenty of suicides. And when I was coaching club indoors or assistant coaching club indoors, I saw so many suicides and I just never liked that. I think it just teaches the kids to hate running. So I like to go, you know, whisper at the kids' ear, not to shame anybody or put anybody on the spot. And, you know, let them know that I need them to cooperate with the drill or to be kinder with their partner or whatever the situation might be that the kid is being unruly with. But honestly, it doesn't happen that often, so I'm blessed with lots of good families and kids at the club and at the school.
Patty, I've seen the way that you teach. It feels very much like you're in a classroom. You have your whiteboard there with you. You're drawing things out, writing down the whole plan. Are there any sorts of things that you did in your, you know, teaching life that you have felt like they really carried over well into coaching?
Yeah, I definitely, every day when the kids will walk into the classroom and they sat down and they opened their folder and we were about to correct the homework together, we always looked at the board and I had the lesson plan written out. So that's just something that is just so natural. The kids, you know, you're trying to reach all the different learners. And whether it's the visual, the kinesthetic, or the auditory learner, I think when they're able to see the plan on the board, it's really helpful. They have expectations. This is what we're going to do. This is what's next. That's definitely something that I pull from the classroom to the practice.
That's cool. And you've talked about singing a lot of songs in Spanish with your kids. Are there any volleyball songs?
No volleyball songs, more dances. You know, the kids have all these moves and I'm always trying to learn and stay current. I guess not so current because it was only until recently that I learned to floss. And then there are some other dances right now. I'm a little behind, but, you know, every once in a while we do them and the kids get a big kick out of seeing, you know, an old lady floss in front of them. So
I think Billy actually has written the only good volleyball song.
Let's hear it, Billy.
Billy?
I've written a couple. The ABC song?
Yeah, the ABC song.
Well, we'll link to it. I can't really say it. Yeah.
Oh.
You could.
Next Monday at practice, I'm going to ask
you to sing make him do it for sure.
To the kids at practice. Awesome. Yeah. Do you bring an instrument?
I can do it a cappella.
It's got a little Dylan influence, so
yeah, there you go.
You might want to bring earplugs. So playing doubles on the beach can be intimidating for someone who's a new player or maybe someone who is an indoor player and didn't have the beach experience. So what do you do with, you know, kids who are just coming out to the beach and are really struggling with all the challenges of the beach game?
Whenever I have a brand new player per se, they're, you know, making that transition from indoor to beach, there's a few things that I tell them. I said, it's not going to be easy. Your timing is going to feel off when you're hitting. You're probably going to hit a lot of balls in the net and out, and that's okay. It takes some time to get your sand legs. So be patient and listen, watch how the others do it, pass on your half of the court. You know, so that type of conversation helps the kids be at ease because, you know, you hate to lose one of these kids that's trying the beach because they're frustrated by how difficult it can be at the beginning, because it can, and it takes some practices to get used to it.
And Patty, I've worked with some kids that are new to the game and they're starting at like 15, and all these tournaments in Southern California are really competitive and they just get crushed because like girls have been playing since they were 10. I guess, what do you tell those kind of players that maybe they tried it out, they like it, but I mean, at tournaments, they're just getting destroyed?
Yeah, I tell them the importance of unstructured play. And it doesn't all have to be practices or privates. You just got to go play for fun, figure it out, play with people that are as good as you, better than you, worse than you, play with the neighbor, and just set up games, grab a ball, go play 2-on-2 for fun. And I tell them you need more touches. And it can be difficult for a 15-year-old playing against kids that have been playing for a long time. But I also talk to them about the expectations. You know, you're not going to make it out of pool more than likely on your first tournament. It might be difficult to win a game. And, you know, maybe your goal is to get 10 points. And then the goal in the next tournament might be to get 15 points out of the 21, stuff like that. So if you can set pretty realistic expectations, then I think the kids have an easier time with that, you know, getting worked. And also, too, you can kind of tell, depending on how good of a learner or how athletic the kids are, you know, is if they're going to be able to advance in the sport or not. I have this kid right now that she's only on her, I want to say, about 12th practice. She was there today, and she's played in her first tournament next Saturday. And she is so, so excited after only 12. She's a soccer player converting to beach, and she decided she was going to try out for her high school team in Torrance, and she actually made JV. So pretty proud of her. And I think she's going to be fine. And yeah, she's going to get worked in the first tournament and second and possibly third. But I think she's going to do really well.
Nice. And when you're working with, again, a younger team, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, do you teach what they'll need for that to win that weekend's tournament? Or do you kind of develop the skills they'll need when they, you know, reach 18s or college, pass, you know, three contacts, pass that hit, that stuff?
Yeah, I definitely teach pass it hit. Even at the 10s, we were at the AVP first, had that national event in Hermosa Beach, and we did really well, and we sent it really well there. And in the 10s, our best team, Millie McGee and Audrey Flanagan, came in second, and I was so happy with how they perform. Yeah, they were serving and doing pass it hit. And we were not ready, you know, for the on twos and the on ones, because we were just not used to seeing it. And I was okay with that, because I know that eventually they will be ready for it. But more important, they were doing, you know, volleyball with the three touches that they're supposed to do. You know, the ones, the on ones and on twos are only going to get you so far. So might as well do the game correctly from the get-go.
Big question for you, Patty. How do we get more youth players and especially young women to hand set more?
Start them young, let them. I really wish that at tournaments they will call it loser, because there's such a variety of, I think it's too tight, number one. And I think that they should be allowed to deep dish a little bit, because a lot of them just lack the strength to be able to lift those sets. So if we did that, and if we club coaches also encouraged it more, then we can get more girls hand setting.
Do you think coaches would, you know, be okay with that if you played a tournament where they were just not going to call doubles?
Well, I think you have to call doubles. I just think that they call it too tight. Mm. They're calling them way too tight. And the thing is that a lot of these tournaments, the CBVA, AAU, all the youth tournaments, you know, the kids are really competitive. And they're reffing each other's matches. So imagine an 11-year-old is reffing a 12-year-old or tournament. Game. And let's say that I made that handset with a little bit of spin or whatever. Guess what? The little girls on the other side, that's not good. And they influence the ref so quickly that they call it. And many, many of those are not terrible doubles. It's just a little spin. Trust me, they're calling it tighter than the AVP. I'm there almost every week watching this, And, you know, all I can do is just shake my head. I can't say anything. As a coach, I'm not allowed to say anything. All I can tell is the kids keep trying. I think that was a pretty good set.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see that change because it's a really, really important skill. And we're definitely, there's not enough females and youth players hand setting. So hopefully you can be a part of that change.
Thanks for listening to another episode. We'll be back next week with part two with Patty Dodd.
A is for approach. B is the bump set. C is for Cobra. D is the deep dish. E, 11-foot line. F is for flipper. And G is the gator. When a serve falls between you and your partner, that's called the husband-wife. I is the I formation, like Arch and like Lambo. J is jumbo shrimp. Randy Stoklos invented the Kong block.
Line, angle, line, angle, line, angle.
Okay,
angle!
M is for Minternet. You should check it on the internet. T-O-N-E-T-T. N is for nectar. O for the top. P is for pancake and also the pokey.
Nice! Yeah.
Q is for quickset. Roof is the roof you're under. Ask Green Pretty to show you about the shuffle step. T is the tip of the iceberg. U is the underhand serve. If you ever heard of Rosie, you've heard of Vegas line.
I do it all the time.
W is waffle. X is the X when the middle blocker comes in for a one and the outside hitter goes in for like a back two or something. Giving me a yellow card. What in the world's your problem? Just give me a red one. Z. What could it be? Z. Zach Barnes. Chicken wing.